Iran arrests several people involved in last week's terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz that left more than a dozen people dead. New data shows inflation in the Eurozone hit a record high this month amid energy crisis that has engulfed Europe following the war in Ukraine. The death toll from the collapse of a suspension bridge in western India rises to 137. Authorities arrest several people in connection with the incident. Hey everyone, welcome to World News. Here in the Iranian capital, I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Iran's intelligence apparatus has arrested the second person involved in a recent terrorist attack on a holy shrine in the south-central city of Shiraz. Intelligence Minister Ismail Khatib says that the suspect was detained thanks to a tip-off by the public. Meantime, the intelligence minister released a statement saying that besides the second accomplice, six other people were also taken into custody for their role in the terrorist attack. On Wednesday, an armed man went on a shooting rampage at the Shah Charak Holy Shrine, one of the famous pilgrimage sites in Iran. The attack, claimed by the Daesh terrorist group, left 13 people dead, including two children, and dozens more injured. Tehran has warned the European Union of reciprocal action if the bloc continues its unconstructive approach and imposes new sanctions against Iran over the recent riots in the country. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani slammed the stance of the EU and the West on the recent riots in Iran as meddlesome, irresponsible, and hypocritical. Kanani said that European officials claim they're supporting women's rights while they back indiscriminate sanctions of the U.S. against Iran that also target women. The spokesman said that the stance helped prepare the ground for riots and chaos in the country. Kanani also urged the European Union not to tie its interests to those of the U.S. and warned of the damage the bloc's confrontational policies could inflict on its interests. The U.N. has held a two-day meeting on counterterrorism in India. The purpose was to help bring more information on how terrorists operate and to prevent terrorist acts from occurring. Now, there was no mention of Iran, though, which has been a victim of terrorism. And ironically, the U.S. now wants to hold a U.N. meeting on Iran over the recent riots occurring in the country.
A special meeting has been held by the UN, titled UN Security Council Counterterrorism. The focus was on technology and the rapid rise in digitization, the use of new and emerging technologies to counter terrorism. In the meeting, the UN cited the important roles that victims and their networks can play in countering terrorism, and to pay tribute to India and how it was a terrorism victim back in 2008.
Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, let me extend a warm welcome to all of you in Mumbai, the financial capital of India, for attending this soft opening of the special meeting of the Counter-Terrorism Committee of the Security Council, as well as the informal briefing on countering the financing of terrorism in national and regional contexts.
Yet there was one country that was not mentioned, one which has been a victim of terrorism, one which was a victim of a terrorist attack just the day before, namely the Islamic Republic of Iran. The U.S. representative at the UN, Chris Liu, said things like, "Today was a powerful reminder that this is really about people's lives." He also said, "We send our sympathies to the Indian people, we stand in solidarity with them, and we are committed to ensuring that the perpetrators of this horrific attack are brought to justice." But no mention of Iran, especially since it lost 13 lives due to a terrorist attack, or the over 17,000 lives that it lost due to the MKO terrorist cult. Not that Iran was looking for sympathy from the U.S. After all, Iran's top intelligence bodies issued a joint statement just yesterday pointing to the major role of foreign intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, in orchestrating the violent riots in Iran in the past weeks. The announcement said intelligence evidence shows that the CIA had devised an extensive plan with the cooperation of allied spy services and reactionary proxies before the start of the unrest to initiate a nationwide chaos with the aim of committing crimes against the great Iranian nation. In short, the intelligence ministries said the CIA played the main role while closely cooperating with the spy agencies of the UK, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. This should not come as a surprise, especially since the U.S. has executed color revolutions. In short, exporting wars, launching color revolutions, fomenting extremist ideologies, and promoting economic instability, especially through sanctions, are just some of the actions by the U.S. which has resulted in bloodshed and turmoil around the world. Some of those countries include Cuba, Ukraine, Syria, Iran, and Venezuela. Here is a man who has openly advocated for support for these rioters and who has said that the U.S. has been involved in U.S. regime change operations. Former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton.
I disagree with that. As somebody who has helped plan coup d'etat, yeah. Not here, but, you know, other places, it takes a lot of work. And that's not what he did. It was just stumbling around from one idea to another. Ultimately, he did unleash the rioters at the Capitol. As to that, there's no doubt.
But Iran has been one of the biggest victims of terrorism. Deputy Chief of Iran's Judiciary and head of the country's human rights headquarters, Kazem Gharibabadi, has blamed Western countries for their double standard policies on terrorism and described his nation as the biggest victim of terrorism. He said on the one hand, they accuse Iran of violating human rights, but on the other, they martyr 17,000 innocent Iranian citizens through terrorism or violate the rights of millions of Iranians through the imposition of unilateral sanctions and jeopardize their right to life.
Well, to say that Iran has been a victim of terrorism is an understatement. The MKO terrorist entity has killed more than 17,000 Iranians throughout decades. Other incidents involved the twin terrorist attacks in Iran's parliament building and the mausoleum in Mount Khomeini. And just a few days ago, a mass shooting claimed the lives of 13 worshippers at a shrine. Yet the U.S. and many other Western countries have refused to condemn that terrorist incident.
The U.S. administration and its allies are now looking to convene an informal private meeting of the U.N. Security Council on recent Iranian riots as an attempt to advance their political agenda. Imagine that, the ones committing instability in Iran to then discuss Iran's domestic affairs, among them the recent violent riots. The Iranian reaction has been swift. Iran's permanent mission to the U.N. said, given the hypocrisy and the use of double standards and select practice of human rights, we regard American claims in support of Iranian women to be deceptive and lacking in good faith. He also stressed that based on reports by Iran's intelligence community, the U.S. itself was the main suspect behind the recent riots in Iran. And to make the situation even more hypocritical, according to a note outlining the events, it said it's the U.S. and Albania which will hold the informal U.N. Security Council gathering to happen on Wednesday. Of all countries, Albania, which has for years hosted anti-Iran terrorists in collusion with the U.S., the MKO, the same terrorist cult which the U.S. named as a terrorist entity once, but then took that label away. Albania does not only host this terrorist cult, but it has turned its country into a hub of interference by the terrorist group and countries hostile to Iran. It enjoys freedom of activity, even after being delisted by the European Union and the U.S. in 2009 and 2012, respectively, of the terrorist label. So it came as no surprise that the MKO terrorist cult was also actively involved in the recent riots in Iran. The findings of Iran's top intelligence body said that 49 MKO terrorists have been arrested. The terrorists were responsible for spreading fake news, instructing rioters to organize acts of terror and destruction, to direct slogans, and to be present on the streets to damage public property. This was in addition to the 77 members of anti-Iran terrorist groups that had also been arrested in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. 5 members of the Takfiri terrorist groups were also arrested in possession of 36 kilograms of explosives that were to be used to carry out bombings and gatherings. The ministry has further announced that 92 people affiliated with the former U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime had been arrested. Added that 9 nationals from Germany, Poland, Italy, France, the Netherlands, and Sweden were also arrested during the riots. Iranian intelligence ministry said a significant number of pistols, various types of machine guns and cartridges, as well as shotguns and ammunition were also seized. So it is quite hypocritical that the U.S. and its European allies impose sanctions on Iran for what they claim is a heavy-handed crackdown on violent protesters, and then move to convene a U.N. session on how to ratchet up further pressure on the Iranian government. Hypocritical also, since the U.S. and these European countries have all been doing the same to their own population, especially the U.S.
In other news, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Navy has seized a foreign tanker carrying 11 million liters of smuggled fuel in the Persian Gulf. Brigadier General Abbas Qalamshahi, commander of IRGC's 1st Naval Region, says that 21 crew members of the tanker have been handed over to the judiciary at Hormuzgan province. A judicial official says investigations and legal proceedings are on the way. The nationality of the owners of the flagless tanker or its crew members has not been specified. The value of the cargo is said to be more than $6.5 million. Iranian forces have seized a number of smugglers' vessels on the Persian Gulf in recent months. The Navy has ramped up efforts against smuggling in the strategic waterway, where a large amount of world's oil is produced and shipped. The Russian Army says it's targeted military and energy infrastructure and new air raids on Ukraine using long-range weapons.
The Russian armed forces continue the strikes with high-precision long-range air and sea-based weapons against the military command and energy systems of Ukraine. The strike targets were achieved. All assigned objects have been hit.
Ukrainian officials have acknowledged that more than 50 cruise missiles were fired into the country, causing blackouts and cutting up water supplies in some areas. The strikes rocked different cities, including capital Kyiv. The mayor says the blitz has left 80% of residents without water and hundreds of thousands of homes without power. No word on casualties. Russia has stepped up missile attacks on Ukraine since an explosion on a Crimea bridge earlier this month. Moscow blames Kyiv for what it calls the terrorist attack. Eurozone inflation soars again to hit a record high this month, and that amid growing fears of recession and energy crisis fueled by the war in Ukraine. According to data from Eurostat, consumer prices jumped by nearly 1% to 10.7% in October. And that's driven by the rise in energy and food prices. The European Central Bank has been increasing rates to offset the soaring inflation, but policy has failed to curb the surge in recent months. And this amid fears that a monetary policy would force the Eurozone economy into recession. In Lebanon, President Michel Aoun has left the presidential palace amid a stalemate over who will succeed him. Before leaving office, Aoun delivered a farewell speech to a large crowd of his supporters who gathered at the palace east of Beirut. Mariam Saleh was also there. She has a report from the Lebanese capital.
History repeats itself once more in Lebanon as President Michel Aoun steps out of a presidential palace, which will remain vacant for an unknown period of time. Addressing flocks of supporters, Aoun said a chapter has ended in Lebanon's politics and a new chapter will begin.
A new phase begins, and this new phase requires struggle and work to exit our crises. The country is looted, and we have to carry out a lot of efforts to uproot corruption.
Aoun talked about the recent agreement with Israel to demarcate Lebanon's maritime borders. He said the deal secured the nation's access to its natural resources, adding that the future revenues should be used to repair the Lebanese economy.
The demarcation of our maritime border will allow us to extract the national treasure of petrol and gas, which would grant us the needed capital to come out of our economic and financial crisis. We hope to see a sovereign fund that would be used for development and also for the upcoming generations.
Aoun took office in 2016. His was marred by mass protests, a severe economic crisis, and currency collapse, and the August 2020 portside blast that killed hundreds.
President Michel Aoun ends his term today at a time when Lebanon is deeply divided on various issues. But it was this term that has given Lebanon what experts are calling a golden opportunity to become a gas exporter and salvage its economy.
President Aoun does not only leave behind a country without a head of state, but he goes back to his residency. The political divide remains quite entrenched, and experts see that the maritime border deal proves that the West has lifted its undeclared blockade on Lebanon.
In Lebanon, we are not usually good at seizing opportunities, but we benefited from the opportunity of demarcating the maritime border. Since there was a Western interest in having a stability in the Mediterranean region and allowing Lebanon to extract its resources. But will the Lebanese seize this opportunity to form an agreement which could result in the election of a president? We are waiting for the upcoming hours, which could evolve into security threats or perhaps surprises.
Lebanese lawmakers have failed to agree on electing a successor for Aoun, with no side having a clear majority to impose a candidate to succeed him. A caretaker government has been in place since the parliamentary elections last spring, and with no hope in forming a new cabinet in the last hours of Aoun's term, political divisions are expected to deepen until the election of a new president. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
A major tropical storm is hammering the Philippines, leaving serious material damage and claiming lives. The storm has now veered toward the northern Philippines. Heavy rains triggered by the storm have aided rice fields and houses in two northern provinces. At first, hit the south, where it generated big waves and forced thousands to evacuate their homes. Some 100 people have died, nearly 70 injured, and some 60 others are missing due to the extreme weather across the country. Well, more bad news. The death toll from the collapse of pedestrian suspension bridge in western India has risen to 137. The Indian Prime Minister has expressed sadness over the tragedy in his home state and says that rescue operations are ongoing.
I express my condolences to the families of the people who have lost their lives in this accident. In this hour of grief, the government is with the bereaved families in every manner. The Gujarat government has been carrying out the rescue operations with all its might since last evening.
Most of those who died were women, children, or elderly. The death toll is expected to rise as rescuers are combing through the river to find the missing ones. More than 177 people have been rescued so far. Police saying that 9 people associated with the company that maintained the bridge have been arrested. Hundreds of people were on the bridge when it collapsed on Sunday. It was overcrowded as people went there to celebrate Diwali or the Festival of Light. The structure had only reopened to the public last week after undergoing renovation. It was originally built during British rule in the 19th century. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
After suspicious explosions in the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 pipelines, which deliver Russian gas to Europe in late September, all Russian authorities unanimously called the explosions an act of sabotage and terrorism, and announced that these attacks wouldn't have been possible without the involvement of at least one Western government. Calling these acts of sabotage state-sponsored terrorism, officials in Kremlin said the United States and Britain's intelligence agencies are responsible for these explosions. Concerning this issue, we take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has more for us. The Russian Ministry of Defense stated that Britain's Royal Navy officials took part in the planning and implementation of a terrorist attack on the Nord Stream gas pipeline network in the Baltic Sea on 26 September. The Russian Ministry of Defense said in a statement on Saturday, 29 October, according to the obtained data, Britain's Navy representatives took part in planning, organizing and carrying out the terrorist attack in the Baltic Sea on 26 September this year to blow up the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines. In late September, the suspected explosions occurred at three of the four strings of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 underwater pipelines, built to carry a combined annual 110 billion cubic meters of Russian gas to Europe under the Baltic Sea. The bombing halted gas deliveries to Germany ahead of the winter season, prompting a gas price hike and a scramble for alternative sources of fuel in the European Union. The Swedish and Danish authorities suspected that the incident was a result of sabotage, with both countries barring Russia from investigating the attack. The Russian Prosecutor General's office classified the pipeline blast as acts of international terrorism. According to Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova, the investigation of terrorist attacks can only be considered reliable and objective if Moscow takes part in the probe. The operator company, the Nord Stream AG, later said the damage to the pipeline system is unprecedented. Russian President Vladimir Putin stated that it was a deliberate assault on Europe's energy infrastructure, hinting that the United States and Britain could have been involved in the blasts. A joint venture by the Russian energy giant Gazprom and four Western European energy companies, Nord Stream 2, is a 1,230-kilometer twin gas pipeline along the bottom of the Baltic Sea, which complements the existing Nord Stream 1 network. Construction on the Nord Stream 2 was completed in September of 2021. But Germany delayed its operational certification and halted the process indefinitely in February of this year, shortly before Russia launched its special operation in Ukraine. The RIA Novosti news agency has more for us. Russian President Vladimir Putin stated recently that terror attacks on the Nord Stream pipeline system sought to cut off cheap energy sources from the European continent, undermining European energy security. Vladimir Putin stressed at the Russian Energy Week forum, he said, "And who is behind the sabotage at Nord Stream? Obviously, those who seek to finally break the ties between Russia and the European Union. Those who want to finally undermine and finish off the political sovereignty of Europe, weaken its industrial potential, and take over the market." The Russian president said the energy crisis was caused by Western policies, not by the start of the Russian special operation in Ukraine. He said, the fuel and energy complex are going through, frankly, an acute crisis associated with unstable price dynamics of energy resources. An imbalance in supply and demand, as well as clearly subversive actions of individual market participants, who are guided solely by their own geopolitical ambitions. Adding that competitors are forcing Europeans to buy energy for higher prices. According to Vladimir Putin, the spot pricing model, which was pushed by the European Union, will bring the bloc $300 billion in losses. Putin added, according to expert estimates, in the current year alone, the spot gas pricing mechanism will bring losses to Europe in the amount of more than 300 billion euros, or about 2% of Eurozone gross domestic product GDP. This could have been avoided if long-term OPEC contracts had been used. Moscow has been investigating the pipeline incidents as acts of international terrorism, while officials of the European Union also said the gas link was sabotaged. Russia has hinted that the United States and Britain may have been involved in this act of sabotage. The Sputnik News Agency has more for us. Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said recently the masterminds of the Nord Stream terror attacks plunge Europe into energy poverty. Alexander Novak told the Russian Energy Week, "As for Europe and its energy security, what happened to the Nord Stream pipelines has actually nullified its energy security. That is, the masterminds and perpetrators of this terror attacks simply plunge Europe into energy poverty." Alexander Novak's remarks came hours after reports that Sweden, Germany and Denmark had refused to jointly investigate the act of sabotage at the pipelines, each pledging to investigate the attacks independently. Sweden is said to have pulled out from the joint investigative team, followed by Denmark. The German Interior Ministry told a recent briefing that the federal policies finished establishing the circumstances of the sabotage at the Nord Stream network, which runs under the Baltic Sea from Russia to Germany. In the meantime, the Russian side has emphasized that it will not recognize the results of the investigation into the acts of sabotage unless Russian experts are allowed to partake in the probe. The Russian Foreign Ministry stated if Russian experts are denied access to the ongoing investigation, Moscow will assume that Denmark, Sweden and Germany have something to hide or provide a cover-up for the perpetrators. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told reporters on Thursday, 29th of September, "The Nord Stream incident looks like a terrorist act on a state level." Peskov added, "It is very difficult to imagine that such a terrorist attack could have taken place without the involvement of some state."
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him,
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about prophethood. And at the moment, we are just discussing about the circumstances that were existent, which were kind of the grounds for the coming of the prophets and the messengers. And one of the things that we discussed previously was from the second sermon of Nahjul Balagha, where we said that the situation at that time was such that there was a lot of confusion, there were trials and tribulations where people were getting misguided by the, you can say, by the directed attempts of the enemies to misguide others, and the enemies of humanity, of course, to misguide humanity. And we saw people's faith became weak. People didn't have a strong foothold on religion, and various other things. Imam Ali alayhi salam also goes on to say one of the other things at that time was that وَاخْتَلَفَ النَّجْرُ وَتَشَتَّتَ الْأَمْرُ. Now what does this mean, inshallah? We will continue in the coming segment.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We were seeing what Imam Ali alayhi salam has to say regarding the times of the coming of the messengers and the prophets. What was the situation of the societies? He says, وَاخْتَلَفَ النَّجْرُ وَتَشَتَّتَ الْأَمْرُ. The situation was such that at that time, the paths of people, their paths were different. There was a lot of, you can say, differences of opinion that were quite critical. There were conflicts. وَاخْتَلَفَ النَّجْرُ. The paths that people wanted to take were always different, and they were not agreeing with one another in different things, especially the fundamental things. وَتَشَتَّتَ الْأَمْرُ. And the other problem was that their issues, their matters, their concerns had become very, very, you can say, variable. People had very different concerns, different issues to care for. And therefore, there was no united front. There was no united effort in the right direction. There was always, you know, different motivations taking people to different ways and different paths. وَضَاقَ الْمَخْرَجُ. Another problem at that time was that people were saying that there is no solution to their problem. There is no way out from those difficulties that this society was facing. I mean, for example, the moral deprivation. For example, when you talk about the economic, destitution and maybe the difference in the economic state of the rich and the poor. These things were so painful, so deep, so you can say entrenched in the societies that people now felt that there is no way out. وَضَاقَ الْمَخْرَجُ. The way out was very, very narrow. And that meant that people needed to really struggle, and not everyone felt like they were in that position to do that. And then he says, وَعَمَى الْمَصْدَرُ وَعَمِيَ الْمَصْدَرُ, mean that people were such that they could not see their position. They could not see where they can benefit from, where they can, grow from. They didn't see how they can go ahead. وَعَمِيَ الْمَصْدَرُ. It had become dark for them. They couldn't see it. They couldn't see from where they can grow, they can flow, they can develop. That was something that was far-fetched and unrelatable to them. They just couldn't be able to see it.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We are talking about the situation at the time of the coming of the prophets, how the societies were. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, وَعَمِيَ الْمَصْدَرُ. The situation was such that people could not see that place from which they can grow, they can, progress. That point of progress was not something that they could decipher, that they could decipher. And then he goes on to say, فَالْهُدَى خَامِلٌ وَالْعَمَى شَامِلٌ. That guidance in those days and age, in that day and age, was something that was, put aside, that was very, very, unimportant, was something that was put aside, unimportant, not necessary. People didn't take it seriously. وَالْعَمَى شَامِلٌ. But misguidance, blindness, lack of insight, these were something that were, overwhelming the whole society. People were like that. People, were thriving in this blindness, in this not being able to see the reality and the inside of issues. أُسِيَ الرَّحْمَنُ وَنُسِّرَ الشَّيْطَانُ. And it was at these times that the all-merciful Lord was disobeyed. His commandments were not taken seriously, and he himself was not obeyed by the people, by the people of that time in those areas. وَنُسِرَ الشَّيْطَانِ. While it was the devil, the shaytan, the Satan, that was being helped, that was being supported by these people. So we noticed that there was a very, very dark picture at that time that Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to show us. And inshallah, we pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we are able to stay away from such mistakes of the previous generations and always take benefit from the teachings of the prophets and messengers. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين
مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Qatar spent more money on gifts and travel for British MPs than any other country last year, and this was intended to gain their backing for the Football World Cup. British MPs who received gifts later appeared to speak favourably about Qatar in parliamentary debates. We have taken a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Observer has more on this story. Qatar has spent more money on gifts and trips for British MPs in the past year than any other country, according to Observer analysis that reveals the Persian Gulf state's lobbying efforts ahead of November's Football World Cup. The Qatari government made gifts to members of parliament worth £251,000 in the 12 months to October of 2022. Including luxury hotel stays, business class flights, and tickets to horse racing events. The value of Qatar's gifts was greater than the amount spent by the 15 other countries whose governments made donations to British MPs combined. And it was more than six times the £37,661 in gifts and hospitality given to MPs by the United Arab Emirates, the second highest foreign government donor. The gifts for the past 12 months also far outstripped those from Qatar in any other year for which records are available, revealing how authorities ramped up efforts to charm British MPs ahead of the Football World Cup. Records show MPs declared about £100,000 worth of gifts and hospitality from Qatar in the 5 years to October of 2021, but more than double that figure in the last 12 months alone. Transparency International said it was extremely concerning that British MPs were accepting thousands of pounds worth of hospitality from foreign governments with questionable human rights records, and that this could leave the door open to undue influence. There is, however, no suggestion that any British MP broke rules. In some cases, MPs who received freebies later appeared to speak favourably about Qatar in parliamentary debates, or to deflect attention away from issues that the Qatari authorities have been keen to downplay. During a debate about preparations for the World Cup earlier this month, Alan Cairns, who chairs an informal parliamentary group set up to foster good relations between the United Kingdom and Qatar, made a speech praising Qatar, including paying tribute to Qatar's response to the crisis in Afghanistan. Alan Kearns, Tory MP for the Vale of Glamorgan, initiated the debate on 20th of October and later shared videos of it on Twitter alongside the Nelson Mandela quote, "Sport has the power to change the world." Records show he received £9,300 worth of donations from the Qatari government in 2022 for a five-day trip in February of this year to meet officials alongside other members of the Qatar All-Party Parliamentary Group, and for a trip a month later to attend the Doha Forum policy event. Details of Qatar's donations were revealed through analysis of declarations in the MP's Register of Interests. The records show 34 British MPs declared 40 donations from Qatar in the year to October 2022. Of those, 22 MPs were Conservative, 7 MPs were Labour, 3 were from the Scottish Nationalist Party, and 2 were Independent. Most of the money was spent on trips to Qatar for members of the Qatar All-Party Parliamentary Group to meet ministers and government officials. During 2 trips in October of 2021 and February of 2022, British MPs travelled to Qatar to discuss issues including preparation for the World Cup, workers' rights reform and bilateral relations, as well as Qatar's humanitarian and political response to the crisis in Afghanistan. The Qatari Ministry of Foreign Affairs paid for the all-inclusive visits, typically spending £7,000 to £8,000 per person for flights, hotels and meals during a 7-day trip. A source told The Observer that British MPs on one trip were put up in a luxury hotel with vast swimming pools and travelled business class on Qatar Airways. Some MPs were taken to a camel racing event and had a private dinner with officials involved in the delivery of the FIFA World Cup. The source said Qatar's lobbying effort was slick and charming, and its goal was clear: to improve Qatar's reputation in the world. The website of UK Daily News has more on this same story. The Persian Gulf state of Qatar spent more money on gifts and travel for British MPs than any other country in the world last year. The Qatari government gave gifts worth £251,000 to British MPs in the 12 months to October of 2022, including luxury hotel stays, business class flights, and horse racing tickets. The value of Qatar's gifts was more than the amount spent by the 15 other countries whose governments had donated to British MPs, and it was more than 6 times the £37,661 in gifts and hospitality bestowed on MPs by the United Arab Emirates, the second highest foreign government donor. Qatar's Ministry of Culture and Sport, meanwhile, paid 2 British MPs to attend the Qatar-sponsored Goodwood Festival in Sussex in July of this year, Transparency records show. The MPs were Sir John Whittingdale, the Conservative MP and former Culture Secretary, who took a plus one and explained the gift was worth £1,200, and Nigel Evans, the Conservative MP for the Ribble Valley. It was the 3rd donation for Nigel Evans from Qatar in 9 months. Neither Sir John Whittingdale nor Nigel Evans responded to requests for comment. The findings will raise concerns about attempted backdoor lobbying by foreign governments in the United Kingdom. Other countries that have donated to British MPs in the last 12 months include Bahrain, Somaliland, Republic of Azerbaijan, San Marino, and Kuwait. Transparency International's Rose Whiffen said, "Too many British MPs show poor judgment when accepting gifts and from foreign governments." Rose Whiffen said, they need to seriously consider whether it's appropriate to accept such trips, not just whether they're allowed to. Chris Bryant, a Labour MP and chair of the House of Commons Committee on Standards, has warned that Parliament is particularly vulnerable to foreign influence and said during a debate last December that we should be aware of the danger that foreign powers could lobby through the back door. Chris Bryant is one of the MPs who accepted a donation in kind from Qatar in the form of a travel allowance, but told the House of Commons in May he regretted doing so. He has advocated for US-style rules preventing members of Congress from accepting donations and gifts from foreign governments. All stays abroad are paid for by US Congress. Relations between Britain and Qatar have strengthened in recent years. In May of this year, the then Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced a strategic investment partnership under which Qatar will invest in key sectors of the British economy over the next 5 years, including fintech, life sciences, and cybersecurity. Number 10 Downing Street said the deal would create new jobs in the United Kingdom and would be worth up to £10 billion. Just days later, Britain's Ministry of Defence announced that it would fund counter-terrorism training for Qatar's military ahead of the Football World Cup. Air and sea support will be provided by Britain's RAF and the Royal Navy throughout the tournament.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith, which has been narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about the Qiyamah or the Day of Resurrection. You know, the Qiyamah or the Day of Resurrection has been described in numerous ways using different, it has different names in the Holy Quran and in Islam and religion. And these different names indicate different properties and distinctions of this day. One of the names of the Qiyamah is the Mahshar. The resurrection is called the Mahshar, the day of congregation of people. People will be congregated, will be gathered together to be judged. Right. In this hadith of Imam Ali, we are looking at one of those epithets, one of those names. Again, the Mahshar, the congregation. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Listen, O negligent and fickle one to someone who exhorts and expounds. The day of resurrection has been made a day of exposition. A day of exposition, a day of questioning, bestowal, and exemplary punishment. It is the day when men's deeds will be upturned and all sins will be computed." And all sins will be reckoned, all of them will be calculated. "When people's pupils will melt with grief," you know, they will, maybe an indication of the fact that on this day, out of grief, people will cry a lot. "An expectant woman will deliver what they carry in their wombs," meaning that day is so grave that, you know, if a woman is pregnant, you know, she will miscarry her child. And in another hadith, we read the following, again from Imam Ali. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "And that is the day when Allah will gather all people from the first to the last, standing in subjugation in order to discuss the account of their deeds and the recompense for their actions. They will be bridled with their own sweat, while the earth trembles under them. Those amongst them in the best state will be those who manage to find a stable place for their feet to stand and an open space for them to breathe." And in the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam also said the following regarding the day of resurrection. He said, "Man will die in the state that he has lived and will be raised in the same state that he died," indicating the fact that the resurrection of man will be suitable and correspond to the way that he lived in this world. If he lived in a good way, he will be raised in a good state. Otherwise, he will be raised in a very bad and a very evil state, corresponding to the state in which he lived. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the day of congregation, the day of resurrection, the day of the mahshar, in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam and the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.